really follow your heart, follow your passion, and get guidance, you know, along the way. So as you are going down your path, your journey, it is your journey. And you don't have to copy somebody else. You know, you can do it the way that you feel it needs to be done, and communicate and connect with a network of people. And I think that's what's going to help you just sustain yourself and keep going and be successful.
Welcome, welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson, and as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was so curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals do, yet the term financial advisor could clear the room at a dinner party. Why was this? And what is this gap between consumers of financial services and the providers of financial services? That's why in this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and providing tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. As providers of financial services, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with our future clients to help them change their family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole do less harm and more good. In today's conversation, we talk to Shahara Wooten, who is the founder of Your Story Financial and a new author. And she helps women and STEM professionals move from unsure to confident about their financial decisions. In this conversation, we cover owning your financial narrative and what does that really mean and what does that look like for the clients she works with in her own RIA. We also talk about the path forward of empowering consumers of financial services with the knowledge that they need to accomplish their goals. We also talk about the inspiration behind her book, In the Meantime, and how that is fitting in to her whole vision of helping the consumers of financial services. Sit back and relax and enjoy this conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And today, I have Shahara Wooten. Shahara, you are an author, speaker, financial life planner, strategist, and the founder of Your Story Financial, a virtual fee-only fiduciary boutique firm committed to helping women and STEM professionals move from unsure to confident about their financial decisions. You have over 17 years experience in the financial services industry and are also a fellow certified financial planner professional, helping individuals and families improve their financial position and craft their amazing financial success story, regardless of their age or amount of assets. You were named one of Investopedia's top 100 financial advisors in 2020 and Quad A's 50 Under 50 in 2020. You also enjoy creating delicious electric plant-based food in your free time because you believe that health is wealth. Welcome to the podcast.
Yes, welcome. Thank you so much. I appreciate you for having me, Dominic. I'm so excited to have this conversation.
This is so cool. I think what we're going to have to do is you're going to have to give me share some of these plant-based recipes because I'm trying to help. I'm trying to get my diet together. You know, if things don't go the same way in your 40s as they did in your 20s. So
That's so true. And that's what I've learned. Like, we've got to make adjustments throughout our life with our health and our food. The food I ate in my 20s, I cannot eat today and still get the same result.
That is a kind way of putting it. Yes, you are right. So right. Oh my gosh. So this topic, I love that you are lending your expertise and your time and your story on owning your financial narrative. I think it's not a coincidence. Sepha introduced us, and you had just moved from Orlando to Dallas. We talked really briefly, but I think it's apropos that you're kind of talking about this because, you know, when we think about who is Shahara, and even zooming out a little bit, like career changers that are moving things around and there's life happening and there's all this kind of stuff. Like, there's not going to be this linear line that I tell people from, you know, start to finish. And I wonder if you can share a little bit about your story, because, you know, you've been doing this a while. I did the math, and you know, like, you did a major uproot a little while ago, moving to Dallas. So I'm kind of curious how that actually played into your story, and just tell us a little bit about that, because I think that would be really, really inspirational for people.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so I'm going to go back, way back. And I actually started in financial services, like Dominic said, 17 years ago. And I was just, it was amazing because I remember being 25 years old. I was in Philadelphia, and I had gone to an Urban League Young Professionals meeting. I'm an engineer by training. So at this time I was an engineer, just got, you know, just working my first job. And I went to an economic empowerment meeting. So there were financial advisors, there were insurance brokers. It was just a whole set of vendors. And I walked up to this table, and it was a bank and the advisor. And I had never really seen an advisor before, I don't think. I don't remember ever seeing a financial advisor. And it dawned on me, let me go talk to him about, you know, money and doing something. So I told him, I said, hey, I want to retire in 5 years. I want to retire at 30. And he looked at me like, and I knew it was crazy, but 30 was ancient to me at that time. And 5 years I knew was short, but 30 just seemed ancient for some reason. But my experience wasn't so great, right? So we went to downtown Philly, I opened an account, and nothing happened. And I didn't understand why. And I don't know if it was because I was young. I don't know if it was because he didn't know what to do. So I decided to change careers and decided to that I wanted to help people do what I wanted to have happen for me at 25. So I think about the 25-year-old Shahara. And if someone comes up to me and says, hi, I want to retire in 5 years, I can give them the realistic, you know, viewpoint. And so that's where it all kind of started. And I got into the industry and was a wholesaler, internal wholesaler with variable annuities, then went into working at a retail firm, broker dealer. And then in 2016, I decided to start my own firm, Your Story Financial. And so that was part of this whole journey that has happened.
That's really cool. I just, you are not the first professional to talk about being a career changer and having a bad experience with the industry. And I just wonder how many financial professionals we have now that are in the field because they were like, man, there's got to be a better way to do this. I mean, and maybe I can be the change. I don't know if you can speak to that a little bit, if that's been your experience too with talking to colleagues.
Yeah. So, you know, I've met so many colleagues. It's interesting. Everybody has a different background. It seems like we're just so eclectic in terms of our experience. And I haven't met a lot of people that had a bad experience, you know, just to be honest, but I definitely could see that being the case. But me, yeah, he just kind of left me there. And now I know how easy it is, right? I remember, and I'll tell you, it's a long time ago because I had my application in a folder and I came home with the paper application and nothing happened. And all we needed to do is just invest me at $50 a month, $100, $300, $500, whatever it was, he could have asked me. But it's just been a variety of experiences. I've met people who never even went to like the broker dealer world and went straight to fee only, people who are in the broker dealer, people who are RIAs. I've just met such a variety.
Yeah. I'm curious though, there's this story that you're telling, there seems to be some interplay between, you know, Your Story Financial and how you call yourself, you know, the term financial life planner, I think has a little bit different connotation than the guy that left you hanging. Maybe you can kind of unpack that a little bit for us.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been an evolution, this journey. You know, I didn't call myself a financial life planner strategist from the very get-go. But over the years, and especially since I started my firm, Your Story Financial, I started it in 2016. And right before that, I remember thinking, wow, everybody has a story. And I was working with a client at my previous firm, and I was just like, yeah, everybody has a story. And then I was just like, I want to start my own firm. So what should I call it? And I decided that I'm going to call it Your Story Financial, because I believe everybody has a story, but then they also want to create a story as well. There's a story that they want to create. And that's where the theme has come in. It's just kind of been interwoven throughout. And it's not, I don't think it was purposeful, but I mean, I believe God purposed it actually, but I'm starting to see the theme. It was own your financial narrative, own your story. And then, just actually last year, I went through a brand strategy session and changed my website and talked with, a brand strategist and telling her how I want to help people, and telling her about, you know, the training that I've been getting with life centered planning and those types of, you know, different schools of thought. She came up with, well, you should call yourself this. And I think she had the words switched around. And I said, well, I want to call myself a financial life planner strategist. I think that's going to be closer. And that's really how we came up with the title. So I've just been calling myself this since maybe the last 8 months or so.
Okay.
Eight or nine months.
But no, I appreciate the transparency. There's often that people don't realize this. They look at me and they're like, you're doing all this stuff, Dom. And I'm like, dude, I'm just a human, just like anybody else. Like sometimes I feel like I am building it while I'm flying it. I mean, you gotta be flexible. There's a bunch of iterations here, you know? So, I hear you. So I think this is a good segue to a term you just said that I want you to kind of describe a little bit more, this owning of your financial narrative. I think that's really key, right? I teach and coach aspiring and existing financial professionals. And one thing that I tell people about is everybody has a story, right? I mean, some of the best movies have, you know, this, you know, you got the character, you got the desire, you got the conflict. And I think that's resident in everybody's narrative, especially with money. We're like, we're telling our prospective clients they're probably telling themselves some type of money story, or they got some type of talk track in their head playing about what money is, good or bad. And sometimes it's our job to come in there and give them different perspective in order to give them, you know, the tools they need to get to the next level. So I wonder how that relates to what you think about owning your own financial.
Yeah. So I'll go back even to some of the things that I thought about when I started Your Story Financial. And I, like I said, everybody has a story that they want to create. And we all start off, if you were to look at our life like a book, there's all these chapters. And the first chapter, we really don't have a lot of choice in how that comes about, right? We don't have a choice in how we came into this world and the things that have, you know, that like how we're born, the economic status, the class, all the our ethnicity. We didn't have a choice in that. But as we go through our life and we have these various other chapters and we move to those, we can actually start to own our own narrative and actually try to, you know, as much as is in our control, there's a lot that's not, but we can start to take advantage of how do I change the narrative? Okay, so these were the statistics about me, but I'm not going to fall into those statistics. So how do I own my own narrative, and how do I create the kind of life that I want? And how do I make sure that the last chapter is as close as possible to what I had dreamed? And so I kind of call it like a plot twist. You know, you talked about the stories and the our life and the scenery. But if we're looking at it as a movie or even a book, we can create a plot twist. And so this is our opportunity to create our own narrative. And so I really like to stick with that theme, so because it puts you in control rather than feeling like the victim or something. Yeah.
No, I think that's powerful, because just in society now, across the cultural landscape, we can see, even if we move it off of finances, that there is a lot of victim playing, right? You know, I think this whole notion around accountability, and Brian Moran says this in his 12-week year, he says accountability, I think a lot of times has been, you know, given a bad rap. People think about consequences when they think about accountability versus ownership, because that's what really accountability is. It's ownership. And just saying, hey, yes, I was dealt a bad hand, but from this day forward, from this time forward, I can, with this bad hand, do this or do this. Like, all these choices are mine. And I've often told people that I work with this, just like, you know, I think if you think about the thing that you just said in an illustration, at the bottom, we have our life experiences that shape our behavior. We can't change our life experiences usually. Like you said, you know, most of the time we can't change the skin we were born in, all that kind of stuff. But you can change your mindset, which is going to affect what you do, how you decide, and then ultimately your results. So I wonder, how have you seen this kind of play out in your life? And maybe you can even bring in some of the work that you do with clients on, you know, maybe how they're thinking about something. You've had to help them with their perspective or change their mindset.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So personally, I've had to do the work too, you know, I just work it on myself.
That. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just really like, okay, what can I do? What do I need to do? What can I learn? And that was also why I said, well, why don't I become a financial planner myself and do my part and what, how we can change things. And then personally with, you know, or working with clients, you know, we work through what are your values? How have you looked at money in the past and how do you look at it now? And then how do you want that to change for the future? So I'm really big into the life center planning. I've gotten training from, the Mitch Anthony, program. And so that's been super helpful for me. And in terms of how to communicate with clients, because again, everybody has a story. So if they have the money, they're just like holding on to it or something. And we can't get to the bottom of, well, how do we get this to work for you the way you want it to work and to grow for your family? Well, yes, we have tools like, okay, let's get your risk tolerance. Let's look at your time horizon. But again, it's not always going to just be cookie cutter because you still got to figure out the person behind that money. Maybe they want to use that money for something else. Or I have clients who just because of the way things are, and I call it what I call it the black tax. So basically I have clients who are just like, you know what? I am going to, no matter what, help my mom with her cell phone bill. I know that, you know, and I know it might seem a little out of my budget, so we got to make some adjustments. I'm not going to tell her, don't pay for your mom's cell phone bill. You know, so, well, what can you sacrifice on the other hand, you know, or what income streams can you bring in to help to make sure you're taking care of family? Because that is a huge value for you. So that's where we, you know, have been able to work on and make adjustments with clients and just aligning their values, what they believe and, you know, how they really want to help others with the money that they've accumulated.
Now, you said something really, really key here, and I think it sets up beautifully for this path forward that I want to ask you about empowering not only consumers of financial services, but the providers of those financial services, which will be, you know, the aspiring and existing financial professionals that are listening to this. You said something that I think is so key is being sensitive to the value system, whether that's a, you know, in a cultural perspective or from an ethnic perspective. You know, you mentioned the black tax, and that's so key. That shows up in so many different ways, whether you're African-American or not, right? You know, for some instances, like my clients like to tithe, right? And that's a non-negotiable. They're going to tithe. Like, so we got to find a way to work it into the budget. I can't be like, no, you're not going to tithe. Like, so I think those are the things that they don't necessarily teach in the CFP curriculum. However, there's a bedside manner approach that I think you have to develop from doing the work. That's something else that you said that I want to bring out. You do the work yourself, and you're, when you're going through a plan yourself, and you know, I'm on the fence on whether or not you actually, as a financial professional, need to hire another one. I think it's a good idea to have some type of outside perspective, whether that's an executive coach or something like that, because when you're doing the work that you're asking your clients to do, you're going to show up differently. Like you're gonna be so much more sensitive to the decisions they have to make and things like that. And on the other end too, right? Like I think before I did the work when I was early on in practice, and then contrast that to when I was doing the work, I wasn't as lenient, right? I was like, look, I'm gonna give you some tough love now. I know the pain that this feels like. I've done it before. Yes. And it empowers you to empower them. Like, would you agree with that? What are your thoughts?
Definitely. Yeah, I do agree with that. I mean, I think that, you know, going through having these experiences ourselves and just really being honest about, you know, what we're dealing with and being able to help others, using that experience to help others. And like you said, you're just like, well, I've been through this. And also, you know, where you're trying to get them to and what they've said, where they want to go. So that's why we are there, to provide that conviction, to remind them, well, you've already said that this is where you want to go. I'm here to remind you, because you're kind of going off track right now. So I'm here to, you know, to get you back. And they're like, oh yeah, I did say that, you know, that's why I hired you, to remind me of these things. Cause people, you know, all of us do it. We're human, and, you know, and I think that's a great perspective too, about having the advisors. I'm a big proponent of having different advisors. I don't have a financial planner yet, but I think that's interesting. You said that, like, maybe not all people need that, but I'm really going to consider, going down that path, and just to show that I've had the experience with it, even if it's like, oh, I didn't need that, but at least I can come back and say either I didn't need it or I do need it. So no, I
agree. Like one of my best clients is a financial advisor, had his own firm, and he hired me, him and his wife. And that was an interesting perspective. And it actually taught me something. It taught me that Dominique, A, yes, you got to do the work. And I've always kind of been not too afraid to do the work for myself, but it did teach me that there are certain industries where I think you have to go that extra mile to kind of prove things to clients and set a signal. There's very well not going to be probably a dentist working on his or her own teeth. But I think from a financial perspective, because there's so much bias around money, it's not a bad idea to, you know, have some outside counsel, whether that's a CPA or a financial planner or something. Because, I mean, just like we tell our clients, you know, your behavior is going to be the major thing that's going to keep you from doing the right thing at the right time. That's why you hired me. I'm not too different than that person.
Yeah, that's true. So true.
What's the first step in becoming a successful financial professional? Well, doing your homework. And there's no better place to understand the financial services industry than Jumpstart University. With video after video of hours and hours of content on topics like the different careers available in financial services, advice for making the switch as a career changer, what to consider when becoming an independent financial professional, how to attract and retain new clients, what's involved in becoming a certified financial planner, and day in the life of a financial advisor, with so much more. All of this for free. You just got to click through the YouTube ads. So head on over to YouTube now to check out Jumpstart YO University. You can find that at youtube.com/jumpstartyouniversity. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
Well, I was just saying, it's like you see yourself in a mirror, and then now you can even have more empathy, I would think, for your clients, because you're like, well, wow, I'm doing the same thing that they're doing, and I'm, you know, and I was getting annoyed by what they were doing, and here I am doing it. Well, and it is a learning experience.
I think so too. I think, and you bring up the point about empathy. That's huge. I mean, when I think about my own investment strategy and my investment accounts, like, it's like I'm doing dollar cost averaging. This is a certain amount that comes out every month, and it just goes in there because I don't want to choose. Like I've said, I've said it. I don't want to have to be like, oh, the markets are going down or they're going up. Like, no, it's just it's automatic. I don't have to think about it. So
absolutely.
Give us the inspiration because I think this will be, like I said, empowering and. Empowering for both the consumer and provider of financial services. Give us the inspiration behind your new book. In the meantime, how did that fit into your story? And I think the reason why I want you to answer this question, I'm going to set up just a little bit. So we as financial professionals, if we're going to be front facing, we got to have clients. Now, whether you work for somebody or you work for yourself, clients have to come in the door or there's no financial plans to create. There's no software to have. There's none of that stuff. And there's certain mediums you can, you know, utilize, right? We're doing podcast video right now. There's blogging. There's book writing like you did. There's all kinds of stuff. And I think some people get lost in a sauce about like, what should I do? Should I do more than one? All this other kind of stuff. Give us the inspiration behind, you know, you looking inside of Shahara and saying, this is what I'm good at. This is what I want to tell. And maybe to give a blueprint, if you will, for how people should decide on that.
Yeah, that's a great question, Dominique. And for me, I looked at, so since we're talking to financial advisors, I looked at how do I want to impact people? So being a financial planning firm, I work one-on-one with people or one to two, you know, because of the couples. And I just felt like, okay, I've got the one-to-one. And then I wanted to also create a course or a program, like group coaching. So I said, okay, that's one to a few. And then I said, well, how else can I impact? How can I have a greater reach? And one, that would be one to many, and that would be through the book. And so that is what I went through, like the process I went through in my mind of how can I start to impact more people and have a greater reach. And the book, I felt like, was the opportunity for me to be able to do that. And then also, from a professional standpoint, I feel like a book can give you that credibility. And for me, I love going on speaking and things like that. And so definitely wanted to expand my paid speaking opportunity. Right. So I felt like a book would also give me that credibility and allow me to just really even more confidently for myself to say, okay, well, if you're asking me to speak, I'm going to charge this amount, that type of thing. And then having a book was like, oh yeah, we probably should pay her because she has a book. And so from that professional standpoint and speaking to my colleagues, that was some of the things that I thought about in terms of writing the book. And then from a personal standpoint, I actually started in financial services and financial planning, changing careers because I just felt like there was a lot of help that needed. We didn't learn a lot about money in school and how can I make that impact? And so once I started to learn that the Black wealth is supposed to go to zero by 2053, which is astounding and devastating, and that there's a 228-year wealth gap between Black families and white families, I was just like, okay, that's what I'm going to have to discuss. I'm going to have to talk about, the fact that I'm here today, like, wow, my parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, they came from enslavement, like that's my ancestral line. And wow, how did they do that without even having much support, without getting reparations, without getting any, you know, there's just been a history of exclusion in our country. So that was all, though, it was a lot of factors that caused me to pick the topic for how I'm writing my book and then also to actually write a book. And so I just said, Why don't I call it in the meantime? So until economic justice is served, let's figure out how do we own our narrative? How do we own our financial narrative in the meantime? So I sprinkle in financial education. Then I also give inspiring stories from various professionals, entrepreneurs. I think I have like one corporate person, but most of them are entrepreneurs. And that's what I did. And so that's where that's how it all how this vision came to pass.
Wow, I love that. I want to put a pin in that and come back to it. I want to bring up something that you brought up, and I don't want to gloss over this. 17 mm-hmm. years in the industry, the book just, I know you've been working on it for a little while, but it just came out, and you hinted at you wanted more confidence. And I don't know if people get this, that you can be in, like deep into your career, and you're just trying to level up. You're trying to get to another level, and you mm-hmm. still need confidence boost. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit, because the career changer yeah. out there is thinking that, like, you know, I'm going to take my CFP, I'm going to get my marks, and I'm just going to be able to go. And I'm like, no, not so yeah. much. Like, you're gonna need those extra boosts of confidence throughout different times in your career, whether, you know, you have a top client that leaves you, or there's a myriad of things that have happened. I know over my two decades, I've seen a lot. Maybe you can kind of speak to maybe if you agree with the statement, and then maybe if you have an example.
Yeah. So what I was referring to when I said more confidence, I was referring to getting paid speaking engagements. And you can get paid speaking engagements without having written a book. But for me, mentally, I had to, you know, I went through that process, and I had a business coach. I have a business coach as well. And we just felt like there's so many factors out there that prove that having a book just gets you more paid opportunities. And so it was just another feather in my cap to be able to say, well, you did this. And I mean, when I think about all of that, yes. I didn't get my CFP until 2019. So I've been in the, you know, profession for a while, but again, back to the confidence, there's that thing where, wow, you've been doing this for a while, but you know, you don't have your CFP, and you just, it's just noise that I didn't want to have anymore.
you're unpacking some really good stuff that, and you know, first of all, you know, you get people that come out of school and they jump right into CFP. Totally fine. Yeah. I don't have any problems with it. However, if you don't know if you really want to do this, 2 years yeah. of your life is a lot to give up, is just the point I make with people. And it's not cheap either. Like, no, I mean, assuming you pass the first time, I mean, you're still going to spend on education and the test. You can spill pretty close to 10 grand. So, I mean, like, don't go into this lightly. And I say, absolutely. I didn't get my CFP until 15 years in the game because, you know, by that time I had done everything that I felt that I wanted to do in the industry. And mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I think the CFP is going to catapult me to this particular level that I see my career going down. And that's what I want people to give themselves enough margin and space to make that decision instead of just doing CFP because everybody's done CFP. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, because it's interesting because actually when I started, it wasn't even something that was encouraged. Like no one even talked about it, you know? So I started out in an annuity company, and then I went to a broker dealer, but I remember being at the annuity wholesaling company. And I remember us talking about, well, you know, how do we improve things for the employees, and maybe we should allow them to get a CFP. And then it just kind of, with the leadership, it just kind of fizzled away. So I probably could have had one years ago if they would have approved that, but they didn't see the value in it. And then it just came back to me, you know, in 20, like when I started my firm. But I will say I had a lot of people tell me that no one's ever asked them if they should get a CFP or if they have, no client had ever asked them. That's what I've heard people say that. But for me, like in the course, it might have been like around 2014 or so. In the course of 6 weeks, I had about three or four people, prospective clients, ask me if I had a CFP, and they did use that. And then I called some veterans and I said, hey, what's going on? Like, everybody's asking me this. And they were like, I've never had that. I've been in the industry 20 years and no one's ever said that. So for me, it was that was a personal experience that I drew from. And I was like, you know what? It was just nagging at me. And I finally was just like, now that I have my own firm, let me remove that excuse. Do you have your CFP? Yes, I do. Yeah. Yes, I do.
I think there's a demarcation, definitely. You and I have been in the industries around the same amount of time. I started in 98. And I think up until, let's call it 2012, 2013-ish is when I started my trek down that path. I think prior to that point, a lot of the CFP marketing that we've seen in the last, you know, let's call it, you know, decade and a half, you know, 15 years or so, definitely a decade, that wasn't being done. So consumers didn't know about it. And that's why when you call colleagues, they were like, nobody's ever asking me about that. But when that marketing machine started going and all those commercials came out, people start asking about that because that's what they know. Like, we're recording this on October 28th. And I got a DM in Instagram last night that somebody said, we're looking to work with the CFP. They said it specifically. Wow. So like that's what people are thinking about now from a consumer financial services standpoint. I wonder if I can go back to a point that you made about the wealth gap, though, as we bring this in for landing, is that what type of conversations are you having around this? And I know the book is fairly new, so maybe you haven't had as many conversations as you probably will. But I guess I'm curious if your experience with consumers of financial services, first of all, are they aware of the wealth gap? And if they are, what are they saying? What are those conversations like? Because I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I honestly haven't had anybody bring up the wealth gap per se. But what really made me pursue the conversation and really start, you know, write a book about it was when I was working with clients, I just noticed that, especially when I was under a business model that required me to get assets, I just noticed that, you know, the people that was attracted to me, the clientele that was attracted to me, they did not have the assets. And I don't even think they really knew. They just live life. You know, they might have been the first generation college grad and they, you know, got a good job and they're just trying to build up based off of what they have. And I just noticed that. When I would talk to, I was in Phoenix, Arizona, and I remember talking to a colleague and we were talking about our assets and the amount that we had in the average per household. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So I have about 260 something households and about 30,000 average was the assets that I had. And he was in Scottsdale and we're in Sedona golfing and things like that. And he was like, oh, okay, because I have about 250 to 260 something too, and my average is 300,000. How is that that you only have 30,000? And I was like, oh, wow. And I didn't realize, honestly, until I had that conversation, the difference. So it was like this reality check that I was like, oh, and then I started to realize, you know, that this is most likely due to the people that I'm working with versus the people that he's working with and the background and the race that I'm working with and that type of thing. And it just really, it was a shocker. It was a shocker because that's how I mean, I knew about it. Like you know about it, but to experience it, you know, I don't even know if I had stayed an engineer, would it have hit me that way?
No. And there's so many layers to this conversation. There's the educational background. There's the fact that, you know, I think the number is still, there's, somewhere between 12 and 17, don't quote me on this, but like 12 to 17 states that still don't require any type of financial literacy requirement, right? You know, my kids are going to where their first semester at Prairie View, they took a personal financial planning course and they were like, this is great. You know, this is very interesting stuff. This is what you'd be talking about, Dad? And I was like, yeah. I mean, but the fact that they didn't get that until college, it's almost like, you know, our whole paradigm shift needs to happen in the United States where this is actually required information to learn financial education, financial literacy before you graduate. because it has such a different trajectory on your outcomes. I'll say this quick story. I volunteered with Junior Achievement several years back, and they mm-hmm. had some literature, and you'll get the point of this, is just basically completing high school versus completing college versus not completing high school, the big wealth gap yes. that happens. But I would even add to that, not knowing about money, right? Not knowing right. how to balance a checkbook, not knowing how credit affects you. All that stuff just absolutely. Has a compounding effect right. on you and the trajectory of your family tree, to be honest.
Absolutely. It really does. And it's so, and so that's what I was there. I was there to, it was almost like I was in an experiment and didn't realize it, you know, like a live experiment. And it was just that reality check that, you know, a lot of people are not, they don't know about it, but they came to me. I'm here to help you. I'm actually going to be the one that'll allow you to start off with $50, because I'm sure my colleague over there in Scottsdale was not trying to hear that or see that. And so, so I just feel like I'm part of that solution. Like, I want to be a part of that solution. I know it's a lot of people that need to help and to come together. And it's, you know, it's about education, but it's also about real time learning. Like, okay, I'm dealing with this situation, and how can you help me with this? So that, you know, if I'm dealing with a debt issue, yes, thank you for teaching me about that in high school, but now I'm dealing with the debt issue. So how do I work that out? You know, that type of thing. Like, it's just, but I do think that financial education is necessary. It's good to know about it, but also good to know that you have access to someone that can help you while you're actually in the real situation, the real life situations. You know,
no, so. I think that's great. I think that's great. And I'm loving that you're stewarding that, that segment of the population that needs it. I think that's what I'm so, I guess, you know, let's call it happy about the work that I'm doing with Career Change and Aspiring Financial Professionals, because they weren't raised like we were. They're thinking about this help and give back a way different. They're not thinking about, you know, the AUM model or all this other kind of stuff. They don't get caught up in that kind of stuff. They just really want to help their community. Where can they find the book as we get ready to close? I want them to be able to support this. This idea and this narrative and keep the conversation going forward. Where can they find the book?
Absolutely. So find the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBook. So if you have an Apple iBook, it's a Kindle, it's Books A Million. There's a lot of places. It looks just like this.
There you go. There you go. Actually, hold on. Yeah, there you go. Let's put that down there. Yeah, put that right there. Yeah, there you go. That's there a really go. Good. Yeah, there you go. That is a good one. That was a good one. We'll make sure we add that in the video clips for the podcast. Now, Shahara, you know this is a podcast to empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their ideal client at the next level. With that in mind, what word or words of wisdom would you like to leave with them?
Yes. So I would say, really follow your heart, follow your passion, and get guidance, you know, along the way. So as you are going down your path, your journey, it is your journey, and you don't have to copy somebody else. You know, you can do it the way that you feel it needs to be done, and communicate and connect with a network of people. And I think that's what's going to help you just sustain yourself and keep going and be successful.
Beautiful, beautiful. I love it.
Yes.
I love this deposit that you've made into the audience, into this podcast on owning your financial narrative. Wish you nothing but the best in the future, Shahara. Take care.
Thank you, Dominique.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstart.com. coachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now, until our next conversation.